Hey all, got another holiday reboot for you all. This was our holiday special from 2017. The four of us got together and we each chose one wintry painting, one winter scene to discuss. It was originally released on December 22nd, 2017. And look at that, it's December 22nd today. That's crazy. So yeah, grab yourself a glass of eggnog and enjoy. Happy holidays.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny. And we are the Art History Babes.
And we're back.
And the weather outside is frightful.
Actually, it's pretty delightful.
It's, yeah.
It's very windy, which yeah. I don't appreciate.
It was sunny in like 70 today.
A little blustery.
In the Sacramento area.
It was cold last night. Cold being like 50 degrees yeah. and I was freezing. I don't do cold. It's California.
That's true. I was out last night and it was pretty cold.
Yeah.
I mean, not Corey cold. Corey's about to come in. I see her little wheels turning right now.
I get it because I honestly don't do well in cold here either. Like I don't do well in cold at all. So like I feel you. Like I've been cold lately too, but it's nothing. I'm actually really worried about going home for Christmas because I haven't been back in years. I haven't experienced Midwest winter in like 2 years. And it's gonna be a shock.
Go to
my
Costco
system.
And get like one of those jumbo packs of hand warmers, and we'll just send you with like all of our jackets, and you can just wear all
just
of our
multiple
jackets.
Jackets.
Just put
warmers.
A couple of those hot pockets in your pockets. Nope. You know the hand warmers are not called hot pockets. Those are a snack.
I know.
You should come up with your own brand of hand warmers called hot pockets, but you can also eat them.
Hot pockets, pockets.
I was just imagining putting like the barbecue beef hot pockets into my,
oh my, God.
Into my pockets.
Feel nice.
Yeah, probably would.
Pizza or nothing.
And then like
pizza.
Molten lava, like cheese comes out and burns you.
Only
like,
I haven't
had a
it's
hot
a
risk,
pocket. But your hands are warm.
I haven't had a hot pocket in so long.
Dude, I had one like a week ago.
I don't think I've ever had a hot pocket.
Oh, that what? Was my lunch staple for a long time.
I didn't want to have a hot pocket, but I
nobody ever wants
no one
to
ever
have
wants
a hot
to.
Pocket.
I don't
yeah.
think that's true. I think there are some cult followings for hot pockets. Like people
probably
get
like,
into that.
Yeah, probably.
It was actually a lean pocket.
Oh,
so.
There you go.
Well, that's the healthy
big difference.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. So it's officially winter in California. Is it officially winter?
Yeah, it's December.
It's officially winter. Yeah. So it's only recently started to feel a little bit colder, but we were just inspired to do a holiday episode. So this is our holiday episode.
Holiday Yay. Magic 2017. Coming
Dang.
At you.
Yeah.
We're wrapping up this year. This has been a really good year for the podcast.
It has.
Yeah.
We're very grateful.
Yeah. I mean, God, it's so affirming that we have so many loyal listeners, and you guys send us all of your listener email, and we love reading it. So much awesome feedback from all you guys, and
love staying connected with you on the social meds.
Yeah.
Super fun.
We have some like very loyal like social media friends and listeners, and you guys are great.
You guys are great.
We love you.
Buying merch and stuff. We
That's
appreciate it a lot.
So
we
cool.
Do. Yeah. We do. I know it's crazy. Like the last, we did an episode on this theme last year and we've made it so far.
Yeah. It feels like a million years ago.
It really does. Yeah. We were really in the thick of things.
We were
going
insane.
We were in another
insane.
World, like another world entirely.
Yeah.
Completely different life.
We talked about Kay Nielsen.
That was a great episode.
That was a fun episode.
The best. We're not going to talk about a singular artist this time, but we all picked some wintry paintings.
Winter themed paintings.
Yeah.
To discuss with you,
so,
like old friends. Sitting by the fire like
we're literally sitting by the fire.
So come sit with us.
There's a tree. We're drinking.
We got all the holiday cliches here.
We have
it's great
cookies and spiced Jack Daniels. Holiday favorites.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Get cozy and warm.
Pour yourself your own Jack on the Rocks.
And
it's pretty good.
And just enjoy some lovely seasonal scenes with us.
Yes. Let's begin.
Let us. Just feel like we all have our NPR voices yes. on.
I know. It's really kind of silly, but
it's
also...
It's our winter special, so we have
we
our...
We just want you to feel calm.
Yeah. And, I'm Julie Deppish.
I think it's also just kind of... man, you know, the world is crazy right now. Like,
just taking it to a super deep level.
I know, I am.
When the world is spinning out of control.
You know, things are really spinning out of control. I try not to pay attention. I really do, but it's impossible not to. I'm not even going to get into it, but that's partially why we want to just look at these beautiful paintings and ignore how much everything is falling apart around us.
This yes. is our gift to you this holiday season. A little escape into some wintry paintings.
Yes. Yes, let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's go for a winter stroll.
This first painting is so winter strolly.
I love this painting. I was really excited when you chose this one, Jenny.
Same.
So this is... Pieter Bruegel, the Elders, ooh. Hunters in the Snow from 1565.
That's amazing.
So Bruegel, you've probably maybe heard the name before. It's a full family of artists. Pieter Bruegel, the Younger, is also a pretty famous Northern Renaissance painter. And they were South Netherlandish artists. Bruegel, the Elder, was a pretty prolific painter. And really what was popular in Dutch paintings at the time, so you have like Italian Renaissance paintings that are very religious and have completely different methods, even though they were kind of working at the same period. So for Northern Renaissance, you have a lot more scenes like this one, which is technically called a genre. No, genre works. Usually I say genre. But I decided to say genre.
Was bold that a choice? Conscious decision?
I don't know.
I didn't even pick up on that. If you hadn't have like
it sounded
paused.
So jarring to me.
Genre.
Yeah, like, genre.
It's a genre. Soft G.
Yeah, I like the genre.
Oh,
so it's a genre painting, and these are paintings that depict daily life. So they're not of wealthy patrons who are paying for the work. They're not of explicitly religious figures, so like the Virgin Mary, saints, and all that. A lot of times there are scenes like this one of peasants just having kind of daily life. And this became really popular during the Northern Renaissance because people wanted, they were interested in seeing peasants. And Pieter Bruegel, the Elder, became really popular for that. He has another famous painting called The Wedding Dance. Yes, The Wedding Dance. And it's just like a big old scene of a peasant village wedding, and everyone's dancing and like lifting up their skirts and like,
ooh,
you know,
drunk.
Dancing around drunk on probably mead, maybe, or ale. Not sure. One of the two.
Mead or ale.
Some old-timey
everyone's
beverage.
Favorite drinks.
So this work in particular was part of a panel of seasons broken into six panels, and it was commissioned by a wealthy merchant in Antwerp. So the patron was wealthy, but he wanted to see the seasons with peasants, you know, working the land. And
because it was novel to him.
Yes. Like, oh, that is how they do it.
Isn't that always the case?
Let's see how the sausage is made.
Look at that woman carrying thatch over a bridge for the hearth in her home.
Ooh. How cute.
How quaint.
Yeah. Exactly.
A lot of times, or in many cases leading up to this, depictions of seasons were really popular in Northern Renaissance paintings. And more often, they were pretty religious and allegorical. This is unique in that it doesn't quite play so much on the... It doesn't really play on religion at all. And there's not kind of these symbolic undertones. It's really just a scene of daily life in a winter landscape. The painting itself, there's a lot of visual narrative going on. It's packed with a lot of detail and a lot of figures. In the foreground are some hunters. And they're followed by a pack of hunting dogs. And they're kind of like shown like trudging through the snow, and they're returning from a hunt, and they only have one thing, creature that they killed. You know,
as you do on a hunt,
which is, it looks like a small fox. And so that's just kind of showing like hunting in the winter is tough. You know, the animals aren't as bountiful and it's very cold and you want more meat, but all you have is a fox. And to the left of that, there are some peasant women who are building a fire. And then it stretches out into this like very wintry village. And so there's frozen water where people are ice skating over it. And, you know, there's people like playing games on the ice and skating around. There are even more figures beyond that walking across the different parts of the village. And then stretching further beyond that are some mountains. And this is kind of a combination of real observations, but also imagination, because Bruegel actually traveled to Italy. And so traveling there from the Netherlands, you would go through the Alps to get down to Italy. And so the Alps are not visible anywhere in the Netherlands. So it's combining what he saw like very south from where they were and just making it that much more of an enhanced, like very wintry scene, which is interesting. And it is fairly common to do that, where you're not you're not just sitting in this village and like, haha, I see all these people and I'm painting this. So you're combining a mixture of reality and imagination. But it comes together to make this really rich painting in terms of all the detail that's there. Like, I would encourage looking, Khan Academy has a video of it where they talk about it and they zoom in to a lot of different aspects. And you can also go in and zoom in on the painting itself, because there's really a lot to unpack with just all the figures. I'm not going to talk about all of it, but the scene itself just has a lot to unpack, which is very typical of Northern Renaissance paintings and Bruegel himself. So that is Hunters in the Snow.
I am so blown away by all work by Bruegel, just in general, because it's so old and it looks so new.
It is just so old.
It's so well preserved, I want to say, I guess is the word. I just, every time I see a Bruegel, I'm just impressed. And this is such a rich painting, and there's so much going on. And it just makes me feel like, I want to be there, you know?
I just want to step into it and enjoy a winter's day.
Yeah.
But also, not like, I don't.
At all. It's, you don't.
Sorry.
Matt's like,
the dogs look really sad.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting part, because most of the other figures in the painting seem to be having an okay time.
Yeah.
But then the hunters and the dogs all look sort of forlorn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because they only got a fox.
Yeah, they're like, well, we're going to eat dry bread and drink ale for dinner again.
A little bit of fox.
Yeah.
Yum.
Fox jerky.
Ooh. I don't know about that.
Sounds gamey.
Yeah. I think it probably is.
I wouldn't want to eat a fox.
Who's eating a fox?
Not me.
Write us if you have. I want to know. Tell me the flavor notes.
Oh, God. No, poor little guys. They're so
not
cute.
Not that I would eat a fox.
I would never eat a fox.
We have a cute neighborhood fox.
What?
That's actually pretty adorable.
Yeah. There's some around our place, too. Yeah.
So, backstory, both Natalie and Jenny live in fantastical little, like, beautiful areas with all kinds of woods.
So does Corey now.
Oh, yeah.
I live in a fairly
wooded
Cameron area.
Cameron Park's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm the only one. Over there. I live in a trailer park next to the train, literally next to the train.
Jen's place is adorable. It is super cute.
It shakes.
It's got that shake. So you know it's good.
It's better than being a peasant in a shack in the Netherlands in the 16th century.
Truly.
Yeah, you're not hunting foxes.
I am grateful.
All right, moving on. Francois Boucher, French painter. Did I say that?
Totally
yep.
Different.
Wow.
I love Boucher. Boucher. I could see you loving Boucher.
You would.
I know, that sounded really
you
accusatory.
You look like you would love Boucher.
I just know you love Rococo.
Rococo.
the Rococo.
I do. And I get all of the criticisms of it. I just don't care. I like Rococo.
I appreciate that. I like that about art, is that you can hear everyone's criticisms and just be like, yeah.
Okay.
Great on you.
It's visually very interesting. That I can't deny. And it was on the heels of the Baroque, so.
Yeah, there we go. There's an interesting relationship there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the balance of extreme lightness and extreme darkness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I just think that the reason why Rococo is so just fun is because it's not trying to be something that it's not.
No, yeah, it's
like
not.
This is all about decadence, mm-hmm. and decadence, fancy but. Parties and luscious dresses and luscious women, and just everything about it just screams decadence, and it's not making any apologies.
It's like the roaring 20s of the
Wow. That actually is a great comparison because I love the 20s too. Yeah. That makes sense.
That is just so good.
Sugary.
I really still want to read that book by Gauvin. He wrote a book about spirituality in Rococo. Yeah. And I'm
your jam.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, God. I don't know what that's gonna entail, but I really want to read it.
I can't believe you haven't read that.
I know. Yeah. I need to buy it immediately.
He's a very good writer too.
He's the best, apparently.
Gauvin Bailey is a Canadian art historian for everyone who's listening who doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about.
We're just like, go on.
Oh, you know, go on.
I feel like we've actually talked about him a few times.
We probably have.
So our regular listeners are probably like, oh yeah, go on.
Man, he should pay us. We're always like, just, you know.
Yeah, this is not sponsored.
Yeah.
All right. So, Boucher. So he painted this series of four paintings of the four seasons, depicting the four yearly seasons, and the winter one is going to be the subject of this evening. It was painted in 1755. It's very decadent.
Yes.
So to start, it's kind of an interesting shaped painting, and that is because it's believed to have been an overdoor, which is a painting that's hung above a door, or it can be like a carved,
like a relief.
Yeah, like a base relief. Thank mm-hmm. you. Yes. Yep. Mm. Like a carved base relief. And it was painted for Madame de Pompadour, who was Louis XV's main mistress.
Dang.
The number one. Yep. And she had multiple homes. So this is believed to have been, the four paintings were believed to have been overdoors for one of her homes. They're not sure which one. But they are quite Rococo. There is a woman seated in a sledge. That's what it's called.
Sledge?
I looked it up because I thought it was a misprint of sled. It's called a sledge.
Is it a sleigh?
It's not a sleigh, but it's spelled sledge.
Sledge?
Or I guess sleighs are usually horse-drawn. Are they not?
Yeah, and I straight up looked it up, the definition of a sledge, because I was like, that can't be right. And it's like a seated vehicle that you push someone around in the snow.
Well, delightful.
So she is seated in a green and gold sledge with a gold swan at the forefront.
I was just looking at that.
Yeah, which is, you know, very kind of cut and dry symbolism, like grace, beauty, mm-hmm. elegance. And she is wearing a silk gown that is fur-lined, but very weather inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's showing a lot of décolletage.
Yes.
And
the décolletage is out there.
Yeah.
To the elements.
Oh,
she would not be wearing that.
I love her little fur necklace.
That's
like,
cute.
It's like a little fur choker.
Yeah. It's kind of like 21st century.
Oh man, that's, let's bring that
fur,
back.
Fur choker.
Yeah, right?
I'm sure someone fur out there chokers. Is wearing the fur choker.
She's looking very coy, and she's got her hands in her little muff. That's what it's called, right?
Well, yeah
muff. And she's being pushed by a man who's in like a pseudo Russian outfit.
Yeah, he looks so scary.
Yeah.
My first instinct actually when I saw this painting, when I like my first glance, I was thinking like Beauty and the Beast. Like he has like a beastly feel to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and he's like, girl, I'm about to take you for a ride.
Oh my God.
That's not what I
terrifying.
Meant.
I mean, he's taking her for a ride on the sledge. Come on. You guys are dirty.
They're bad. So his attire is supposed to represent this 18th century fascination with Russia, which I wasn't super aware of.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, when haven't we been fascinated by Russia?
Oh, my God. That is so
good
true.
Not in my lifetime. Yeah. So Boucher is supposed to be very good at these landscapes. and you can see it's not a heavily landscape based painting. So in terms of painting depictions of the seasons or allegories of the season, Boucher really diverts from the traditional way of painting seasons, which is to show peasants and laborers. And he decides to throw a Rococo twist on it and do this kind of lavish, pleasure-filled scene that's just all about decadence and luxury and not a sight of labor to be seen. And this is the most famous of the Four Seasons painting because of that aspect. I mean, it's all about this lounging woman in her coy little look and for the pleasure of Madame de Pompadour.
Do you think that's her in the painting?
I thought about that, but there's nothing that says that it is, right. So I'm guessing that it's not.
This is such a...
That's Louis the...
Louis the... Right. As a Russian Santa Claus.
It's more like an elf.
Yeah.
Like an old-timey Russian elf.
Yeah, he's kind of terrifying, but she is coy, and that's such a Rococo... motif, the like coy side glance woman.
Yeah.
Oh, he's like, oh, hello.
Rosy cheeks.
He's got a very intense look in his eyes that I don't trust one bit. But
yeah, the longer I look at this painting, the more I'm like, get out of here, dude. What are you doing?
You get out of here.
You get out of here. Yeah. Oh, I love the Rococo. I feel like there are maybe many kind of holiday themed Rococo works. It just seems
it
like
lends.
It would suit the Rococo.
I agree. Definitely. So that is Francois Boucher.
I love it.
Four Seasons Winter.
Nice.
All right.
Oh my God. This one's crazy.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
This is beautiful. This one's, we're gonna get a little dark with this one.
I love it.
So for something a little different, my boy, Caspar David Friedrich. Oh, I love him. I just love him so much. Winter Landscape, circa 1811. This is actually a painting that I wasn't super familiar with. I almost did another one of his paintings that was actually on that list that you sent us of winter paintings. I can't remember the name of it, but it's just
the ice sheets?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a great painting, but I was like, oh, I'm going to search a little deeper. And I found this winter landscape, and it's beautiful. There is... a very like dark Christmas vibe, like a Christmas goth aesthetic going on, which I posted this thing on our Facebook the other day. Like,
I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So like, I am in no way a supporter of Melania Trump, but she has been killing the like Christmas goth aesthetic at the White House. Like,
did you see SNL when they like kind of made fun of that in the,
I might have missed it.
Yeah, it's like where the woman that plays Melania Trump was like, you know, downstairs all the dead branches. It's pretty funny.
But yeah, like it's just like this super gothic like take on Christmas, and it's all over the White House, and I kind of love it. But I get a very similar vibe from this painting, like a dark Christmas. There is a castle rising through a purple haze in the background.
And
in the
okay.
Nice.
In the foreground, a crucifix is erected among a group of evergreen trees. And the whole painting has a very like fairy tale but spooky vibe. Like with the castle, it's very Disney, but there's something creepy going
sinister.
On.
I don't know about Disney. It looks scary. It looks like there's a warlock lives in there.
Well, there are scary things that live in castles in Disney.
No, that's true. Scary that's true. Live in Disney
I was
castles.
Thinking of like an enchanted castle.
Yeah.
Warlock.
So there is a warlock dwelling in the background. So it's a pleasant scene, a little spooky, but it kind of gets pretty dark once you look a little closer. There is a young boy that is leaning against a rock that is praying in front of the crucifix. And if you look in the mounds of snow, there's kind of like rolling hills of snow. You see two crutches laying among the rolling hills of snow. This has basically been read as like, this little boy's about to die.
What?
So he's making amends. He's, you know.
What could he have done?
Getting ready to meet his maker.
I think he's just ailed.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what the crutches symbolize.
So he's, I kind of got like a pre Charles Dickens Tiny Tim is yeah, it's very Tiny Tim, but before Tiny Tim was a thing. I wonder if Dickens was inspired by this painting. That'd be cool.
See, when I saw this painting, I thought that there was like a miracle like about to happen, you know, like he was walking towards the crucifix and suddenly didn't need his crutches anymore. But upon closer inspection, he's definitely laid out against that rock. And it is probably freezing cold out there. So it does look like he is going to succumb to the elements. This is such a dark painting.
I know, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like that reading of it. It's a very optimistic way to look at it. But he's definitely, like, leaning up against the rock.
I'm normally never optimistic. So that's just ridiculous that I would think that.
But, I mean, if his ailment doesn't get him, that warlock in the castle is going to get him.
I'm saying that is a menacing castle.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's based on a real castle.
So I don't know if it's based on a real place, but I also read that it's actually supposed to be a cathedral.
Oh, I was going to say, it looks a little more...
Yeah.
Gotcha. Churchy. Okay.
Damn,
no warlock.
I mean, there could still be one.
It's still possible.
Warlock priest.
It's like, is that like a priest of like Wicca then? If it's a warlock?
Whoa. Maybe it's a conflicted man who is drawn to Wicca as well as... Catholicism.
Blaspheme. Hey,
they're more similar than you would think.
Truly.
Fascinating.
This painting has been referred to as a seasonal ghost story.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Which I love. I love all of that. The only thing I love more than Christmas is Halloween. So like if you can like combine them together, all about it.
Sold.
But yeah, it's a typical romantic painting in the sense that there is a lot of just emotion, and he uses that stereotypical like haziness of romanticism. One of my favorite things about Friedrich, though, and it's seen in this painting, is you have this fusion of God and nature going on.
Mm-hmm.
He paints a lot of landscapes. His most well-known paintings involve standing in nature, like standing in awe of nature, essentially worshiping nature like God.
Yeah.
But yet Caspar David Friedrich was also Christian. So there's a clear fusion of spirituality and nature for him.
Yeah.
And it comes through in like every single one of his paintings. And this one is definitely no exception. There are actually two versions of this painting. It is debated whether the second version that is housed in the National Gallery in London is a copy by Friedrich or if it was made by one of his pupils. The original is at the, I don't know, German Museum for Kunst und Kulturgeschichte.
Kulturgeschichte is history, so cultural history.
Okay.
Nice.
That makes sense. I mean, I knew that.
Nice.
Only one version of the painting was recorded as having existed in 19th century documents. Mm. So for art history nerds, it's kind of one of those like, oh, is there, mm-hmm. who is it? Who made it?
Who did it?
I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's been kind of the hot topic of the art world as of late with this whole Salvador.
Fucking Salvatore
Mundi.
Salvatore.
We just don't know. Was it Leonardo or not? I'm going to say... not.
Yeah. Handful of people are like, yes, I want Leonardo.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that, but I'm just saying.
I know, right?
Not.
But yeah, so yeah, it's a enchanting little winter scene, especially if you dig kind of the dark winter vibe.
Ooh.
Check this painting out for sure.
It's definitely enchanting in the sense that I am spooked. So... I am spooked. We went in sort of a chronological order tonight.
Did we really?
I think we did. Yeah, we started off with Northern Renaissance.
That wasn't even intentional.
We went into the Rococo. We're at Romanticism with our boy CDF. And now we're going to move into Impressionism. And I just love Monet. And Monet was kind of like a master of painting snow. He scandalized some of the art world when he exhibited a pastoral sort of scene called The Magpie in 1868. Actually, not the painting that I'm going to talk about, but briefly, I just want to mention that Monet has been regarded as sort of like this master of the winter scene. And he painted more than 100 landscapes of winter snow. He painted a lot. So what makes The Magpie special and how it relates to this other painting is that Monet was always so interested in light. And as we know, in the winter, or well, I know this. I don't know if everyone.
Well, I know this.
I'm just saying that the sun is not where it normally is during the summer. The sun is somewhere else. So light is different. That's it.
Science lessons by Jen. It's
like the most basic science lesson.
Light is different.
The sun is somewhere else. It's not where it is in the spring. It's not where it is in the summer. That's why we have seasons. Ay. I just explained it. So Monet is interested in light and how light changes throughout different times of the day, different times of the year. And so Monet loves to paint snow because snow has a particular way of reflecting light so that it creates some very interesting shadows. And so many of his snowy paintings, winter scene paintings, are infused with all kinds of different colors, pinks, yellows, especially blues for the shadows, which was something that had not been done. Shadows were usually in black, and mm-hmm. so this was blue, and so that just blew everyone's mind.
Yeah.
Blue, get it? So, but the painting that I actually want to discuss is, it's a much more subdued work than The Magpie. It is called Snow at Ardigan Tuile. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I always have to preface, like when I say something in French, I don't know what the hell I'm saying. So just bear with me, guys. But Monet lived in this town called Ardigan Tuile. Tuile? Tuile? Ardigan Tuile? Ah, whatever. Monet lived there for a couple of years. It was a very beautiful little town where a lot of Parisians would go there for little day trips. And it was this quaint little town northwest of Paris on the Seine. And so in the 1870s, he lived there for a long time, most of the 1870s. In 1874, the winter of 1874 was very snowy. And so Monet painted at least 18 scenes of the town during this time. So there's many different versions that are called Snow at Ardigan Tuile. And the reason why I picked this one is because of the falling snow. So this is something that you don't normally see in these winter landscape paintings. Actual snowflakes falling on the scene. This painting is so interesting to me because A, the falling snow, but also it's like a very strange time of the day. I would say it's around 4 p.m. and the sun goes away very early in the winter. And so it looks like that moment before it gets dark. The sky is very gray, but also upon closer inspection, it is not gray. There's blues, there's purples, pinks. So lots of different colors. You can see the very visible brush strokes in the sky. He captures a scene of the city sort of far away, and there are people walking. You can see that they are shielding themselves from the snow. And I love the snowfall in progress because this gives us a glimpse of how many Impressionist artists were just so fascinated with these Japanese ukiyo-e prints. Mm-hmm. So yeah. There are many scenes of snowfall in Japanese prints. And so the Impressionists were seeing these prints. We know that Van Gogh was looking at them. We know that Gauguin was looking at them. And surely Monet was looking at them too. So I really love that. I think that The Snowfall makes this a very special Monet. It currently is living in the MFA in Boston. So if you're in Boston, go take a look at it. Yeah, it's just, it's really beautiful and serene. And I just feel like cold and I want to drink a hot chocolate when I look at it.
Yeah.
Snow scene at Argenteuil. If you like Monet, look that up and you'll find at least 18 different paintings with the same title.
Beautiful.
He lived there and he loved that town. And so with that, we are wrapping it up.
We are wrapping it up.
Like a gift for you.
Oh, that's sweet. I hope that everyone has a amazing and lovely holiday season, whether or not you celebrate whatever. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. I know there's probably other holidays that I can't remember.
Saturnalia.
Oh.
Oh.
When's Boxing Day?
No, I actually know. I just saw it on a calendar. I think it's in January.
Okay.
Cool.
For our Canadian listeners.
Yeah, I was doing some holiday stuff and I actually saw that.
What do you do on Boxing Day? I'm sorry. I'm not trying to go on a tangent. I'm just like, what is that? Do you put stuff in boxes? I don't know.
Yeah. Who's to say?
If anyone
Who's
knows what say? Boxing Day is, let us know. Email us at arthistorybabes.com.
We have some Canadian listeners, I think. Yeah. They'll tell us.
Arthistorybabes at gmail.com. Sorry. Left that little tidbit out.
That part.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope everyone has the coziest of winter holidays. If you want to see what the Art History Babes are up to over our winter breaks, follow us on Instagram. We'll be keeping that story hot.
Yeah, we are going to be probably not taking a real break. God, you know, we're not in school anymore and we don't get winter break anymore. That makes me sad. Every day is the same. Oh, man.
Except recording days.
This has been a very special day and look forward to awesome things from us in 2018. Everyone have a safe and happy new year. Do not drink and drive. Take a Lyft.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
We love you.
I love you so much.
Oh, man. And with that, we bid you adieu.
Goodbye.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the Art History Babes.
Have a good time.
Just put a couple of those Hot Pockets in your pockets. Nope.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.